Hi, I'm Melanie Barr. Welcome to the She Built It Experience with Melanie. You're here because you want to experience the life and business that you crave. Join me as I talk to women who have successfully built it, a career and business that they love. We dive into the topic of how they built it and talk about everything from having the courage to make career leaps to the details of how to lead effectively, create successful teams, implement strategies for growth, and infuse tech innovation. Magic happens when we focus on the part of ourselves and our business that brings us joy. So let's dive in. Sarah Peck is the founder and CEO of Startup Parent and the host of the Startup Parent Podcast, an award-winning podcast featuring women in entrepreneurship, business, and parenting. She runs the Wise Women's Council, an annual leadership program for women to come together honestly while navigating the challenges of working and parenting. Thank you for joining us, Sarah. Tell us about Startup Parent and why you decided to create it.
I got pregnant while I was working at a tech company in downtown Manhattan, venture-backed. They went through Y Combinator. I was the sixth person to join. By the time I got pregnant, I think there's 12 people, but no one else looked like me. Nobody else was having kids. Nobody else was doing what I was doing. I think there was one guy who had kids, but he didn't work in the office. And I just had no idea how to do parenting and working at a startup. And when you look out at the broader world, you look at these pregnant women on the cover of Inc. magazine, and they looked perfect, right? It's like how I built this million-dollar company while pregnant. And then I couldn't figure out day-to-day life. I felt like I was totally drowning. I was struggling with shock at getting pregnant. I didn't even know this lifelong dream. I was like, wait, do I want to be pregnant? What am I doing? What am I getting myself into? And that loss of my own identity and the slipping away of my freedom, I just needed a resource. So I started documenting my own journey, which involved a lot of like, this food worked to combat nausea. And I had this side blog for a while, and the blog turned into a book proposal. The book proposal turned into a podcast. I had a 6-month-old when the podcast launched. And I don't know about anyone else out there, but taking on more free work when you have a 6-month-old is not that great. So I asked for sponsors. We got $30,000 in sponsorships to launch the podcast. And that is the evolution of the business as it started. It was not as light bulb moment. I knew exactly what I was going to do. It was more of an evolution. And we're 5 years in now, and we have a community for women to support them. And we're launching Founders with Kids later this summer.
Good for you. And I love that you bring up such a good point about seeing the women on the covers of the magazines and how perfect they look. But it's so perfectly imperfect when you look at the real day-to-day life. And when your kids are younger, you're just struggling to keep up. I'm a mom of 8-year-old twins, and I supported myself in LA since I was 19 until I got married. I love to work. I find so much joy in work. And I found myself sitting in a nursery, which I love. I love the twins so much. I've loved every moment of being a mom. But you lose a certain side of yourself that you always had. And you think, how do I find that? And how do I maintain it? And the struggle to do that looks different now.
For me, I just felt so confused and overwhelmed because I felt like everything I thought I knew about motherhood was a lie. And I know that no one does it on purpose, but it's like, oh, pregnancy is so great. You're glowing. You know, no, it's really rough on your body. You know, it's morning sickness. No, it's all day sickness. You're going to be able to have a natural pregnancy or birth. There's no such thing. Like, you don't have a natural root canal. You get drugs for that. I was so discouraged and disappointed that no one told me about this. And no one was saying, like, it's okay not to like motherhood all the time. And it's okay to feel like you're totally overwhelmed. And by the way, that whole myth of doing it all and having it all is total BS. I wish someone had said, and I recorded a video about this the other day, you're not going to have it all. You're not going to be able to do it all. And you probably won't get your body back after baby. And those things are totally fine. Of course, you bring a life into the world. You create this whole new life. It affects all of your relationships. It changes how you think about work. Maybe it magnifies it. Maybe it makes you more passionate about it. Maybe you quit your job. Maybe it makes you desperate to get the things that you used to have. But to expect that it won't change you is so weird when you think about it.
It's so true because no one tells you. No one really tells you, because if you say certain things, you might be looked at as not appreciating what it is you have or the kids. And so we love our kids, so we want to make sure that we convey that, but we're not always honest about what's going on. I went through IVF. I remember sitting through a meeting and my daughter, Parker, who's eight now, her head was sticking in my rib. And for 2 hours, I was in pain trying to have a good meeting and convey myself and what I was introducing in the right way. And no one really talks about that. I mean, I went home and have maybe even never mentioned it again to anyone else, but it's painful. And going through IVF, I was a vice president in a company. And I said to my husband, I'm going to be putting drugs into my system. So I might not act the way I normally act. And just know that that's because I'm putting something different into my body every day. But we don't always talk about that.
We don't talk about miscarriage. We don't talk about fertility. Now that I've lived through it and I've interviewed 200 parents on my podcast and another 100 through the Wise Women's Council, I just love talking about it because fertility, 1 in 6 people are going to struggle with fertility. And not just women, the guys also struggle with fertility. And 1 in 4 pregnancies ends in a miscarriage, which means if you're in a room with 3 other women, one of you is going to have a miscarriage. And we just need to talk about it more so we can say like, yeah, that was hard. What was it like for you? How did you get through it? What do I need to know? Instead of this hush, hush, never talk about this. Because remember when we were teenagers, they're like, don't get pregnant. Don't get pregnant. Pregnancy, it happens like this. You get to be 35 and you're like, that didn't happen the way that I thought it was going to happen.
Right. And on the flip side of that, how do we maintain work if that is something we want to do? And if that is part of our identity, it's messy. And you just have to get up every day and keep going. And I can see how having that support around you can really help.
I am so passionate about women being able to make decisions for themselves. Same with dads, right? Same with all parents, binary, non-binary. You being able to make your own decisions and have agency in your life is really important. And especially for career moms, people that want to work, people that love what they do. I work with business owners and founders and entrepreneurs. 30% of women, this is before the pandemic, 30% of women that wanted to work dropped out of the workforce because there's no daycare options for them. There's no paid leave or parental leave options for them. They suffer from pregnancy discrimination and then motherhood discrimination. And this is a whole bunch of people that they just want to work, right? They, like, it's not like they're dropping out because they don't want to.
As women, we have these moments where that necessarily men don't always have. I worked for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and I remember standing there looking around going, if I had kids, how would I maintain going to 80 games a year and working the 9 to 11 hour days during the season that I was working? How do I keep working in sports and have a family? And not everyone has to ask themselves that question. And, you know, when you're in these certain work environments, when I got pregnant with the twins, I was the only woman in a team of men. And I remember thinking, I can't tell them I'm pregnant. And I was lucky because we were all across the country. I think I was 3 months pregnant and I think they thought I just gained weight. But I thought, I cannot tell them till the very last minute. And then they wanted me to fly to a meeting and I had to tell them then. I said, I can't fly. I'm on the no-fly list. You know, they said, what are you talking about? I said, well, I'm pregnant. I did not tell them I was having twins though. Because I thought if I tell them, they're going to think I want to step back from this project and that I'm not going to be as invested. And so after I had the babies, they said, oh, how was your pregnancy? What did you decide to name him or her? And I said, well, babies. And they said, babies. And I said, yes, I had 2.
The story that you told, the thing that stands out to me is that other people think that they can do the thinking for you. And this happens so much in workplaces where you're like, well, I'm not going to tell them because then they're going to think that I don't want to work. And that idea that they can take my ambition and drive and make choices for me is, I have all the swear words for that. I'm not going to say them right now because I enjoy working. When I was 6 weeks postpartum, you can't do everything. I just want to be totally clear to people listening, but I would skip showers so that I could write. And I loved my writing and I didn't want to miss it. I had all these ideas and all this creative energy, but I was able to do a little bit because I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And I think taking that away from people and saying, you shouldn't work at all, or you should be back and you should be perfect and you should look like nothing has changed. Those are so extreme. And I wish that we move towards a world where you're able to say, hey, I've got a kid in here stabbing my ribs. And actually, I'd be way more comfortable if I could just walk in circles around this conference room. And I may just need to stretch, but that doesn't affect my thinking. That doesn't affect my capacity. All it means is that I have to stretch because I'm a human in a body. wild.
Right. And it's not going to affect your ability to work or your future want to work. And maybe what we do ends up shifting a bit. And that's okay. We have to look at it that way. My background was in corporate for Marriott and AT&T and the Los Angeles Dodgers. And after having the twins, for a while, your identity, you think, who am I now? And I think we have to be okay with having that change a little bit.
Love that. We live in a culture that doesn't want people to change. Oh, you said this on Twitter 20 years ago. Like, no, I'm a different person now. Like, who you met in high school, my body has regenerated itself 8 times since then. I wish we had more generosity with each other and grace around that, being like, oh, you know what? Flying might be really hard for you because I understand what feeding a baby looks like during the first year. Going to 80 games might be really hard. What job could be really well suited to keep you plugged in here? How can we, you know, we move people around on baseball teams all the time. We move people around on the football field. Like, why can't we do that in our offices? Hey, this job doesn't work for you, but like right now you should do this. And then maybe later on, once your kids are not needing you and interrupting you every 2.5 minutes, there's a chance for you to have full thoughts again.
I actually said that during COVID. I said to a friend, set your timer for every 15 minutes and pretend someone's coming to ask you a question and you actually have to physically get up and respond to it. That's what it was like homeschooling twins during COVID. So that, again, I had to take a mindset of this is where life is right now. You know, I have to give to my family, but I'm not going to stop my dreams, my goals for the business, what I want to accomplish. They just might not happen at the pace I want them to right now, because this is the life we're living at this moment. And at times that can be hard to do. You believe in fixing a broken work culture, and we've talked about this a little bit. How do you believe that we do that?
Part of it is there has been a shift even over the last 30 years where workplaces have gotten more and more intense and more demanding. And the way that shift has happened looks like now you have 2 jobs instead of 1. Years ago, you might have only been a journalist at the New York Times. Only, I say, because that's a really tough job. And now you have to be a journalist at the New York Times and run your entire Twitter feed on the daily. There, that's 2 jobs. Plus, maybe you're doing 6 more jobs as well. Maybe you've added the number of articles that you're writing. I'm just using that as an example. But in most jobs, you have the McKinsey's, you have the Deloitte's, you have the Bain and companies coming in and looking for efficiencies. Efficiencies look like removing labor most of the time. How can we streamline jobs and cut them back? You see it in retail services where, you know, you'll have a service worker or a retail worker, like a Gap employee, and they come in for a shift from 6 to 10 a.m. and then they're scheduled for another shift from 2 to 4 p.m. and another one at closing at 10 p.m. And the computer algorithm thinks that's fine because it's efficient, because we've gotten those 8 hours and we've covered the peak demand. But there's no humanity in it. You can't open and close and then have it something in the middle of the day and maintain any sort of freedom of your own life. When do you even sleep? So I think that we're really at an inflection point where workplaces have become quite toxic. And luckily, because of the pandemic, and I say luckily carefully because the pandemic's not great, but labor has more power now. And it might not be for a long time, but advocating for yourself in workplaces is going to be the first step. And I have lots of thoughts on the future of work, but that's one of them.
And there's such a shift in the culture of work today, how we're buying and selling products. I think it's exciting, but it's all shifting so fast. And because of technology, because we took that time away, but we also increased our amount of time we're using technology because we had to, just sped everything up so much faster.
Yeah, we have instantaneous expectations. Like, I'm going to buy a package and it should be here by tomorrow. So if you're a small business owner, you're expected to now do overnight shipping for everyone. That's really challenging. The consumer expectations are extremely high. It's also, to your point on technology, we're up at 6 a.m. answering emails, and then we go to the workplace, and then we check in while we're at the soccer, and then we, you know, do some quick emails at 10 p.m., and then we're working all day Saturday and Sunday. So now we're giving twice as much for a job that wants us to work twice as much. I want to step back and be like, is it worth it? Like, are we able to step back and look at it and evaluate, yeah, this is exactly what I want to be doing with my life? It gets so hard because we're trapped in hustle culture, so everyone else is doing it around us, and we think it's normal, but it's not. People burn out consistently, repeatedly.
And this is a perfect transition to my next question. You're an advocate for setting boundaries and saying no. What are the 5 phrases that we can use to set better boundaries?
I think this is one of the superpowers of motherhood and parenting. Like, you're under a baby and somebody calls you for something that in your previous life, you might have like really hustled to do. You're like, yes, I can get there. And you race out the door, whatever it is. And a lot of people are scared to say no. Women in particular have trouble saying no because we're cultured to look good, to not complain, to help other people, to be generous, but in that way that's serving everyone else, and to make sure that everyone else gets what they need before we do. In setting boundaries, it's a long conversation, but it starts with getting really clear with who you are. And that takes work over time in actually listening to those subtle signals in your body. For me, there's that story of like, it's a hell yes or a hell no. I was always confused because I never had that. I would start to talk myself into things and be like, yeah, this would make sense. Yeah, I could totally, you know, fly around the world and like stay up all night and do a talk. And this would be great for my career. I realized that my hell no is actually when I try to talk myself into something, when I try to rationalize it, when I use that exact sound, which is, well, that's my no. And so you as an individual have to learn, where is it in my body that says no? If you're new to this, you won't know right away. So you experiment and you say, oh, that's a weird feeling I'm having. My stomach is doing these flip-flop things. And then go ahead and do whatever it is you said yes to and ask yourself afterwards, did I like that? And then you start to pattern map between, you could start to get the clues of your own body and history. I really like writing scripts for other people. So my friends will text me and they'll be like, Sarah, I got asked to this thing. What do I do? How do I say no? And I'll be like, ooh, how would I say no? And I think about it and I write it out. So I'm collecting those. I think I should make it into a book. But my favorite one is, thanks for thinking of me. That's not the right fit. Good luck. And that's it. And the key word, that's not the right fit.
Right.
The trouble we get into is when we say things like, oh yeah, Saturday doesn't work for me. What do you think the person's going to say? How about Sunday?
And you're right. That phrase, you really have nothing to say back to it because it answers every question. When people ask me to do something, I've learned to, because I'm the kind of person who will write back immediately. I've learned to put my phone down for 5 minutes and walk around, because so often I respond and then I think, oh, why did I do that?
Yes.
Why did I agree to that? It's because I didn't think it through long enough and I just responded instinctively too quickly. What is your approach to management and leading your teams? And what do you think is the most crucial element of leadership?
This relates to what we were talking about. A lot of managers defer decisions and they push them onto their team. The role of a manager is to really protect your team's time, to help them find out what are we going to focus on? What are we not going to do? What's the strategy? And to make sure all the players are on the same page. And if you say to your person, there's so many bosses that do this and it's just bad leadership. You've given them an assignment. You've given them a project. We're working on this content initiative and we're trying to get it done. And then they're like, oh, we're going to do this other thing. Here, do it. Right. And they toss it on your plate. And people are like, wait, and they don't know how to say no and manage upwards because the boss has failed. The leader has failed in that regards. So one of the scripts, and I will say, I have a book with these 5 scripts, startupparent.com/half. I will send you the link so you can send it to people, but I write these all down so people can get them. But this one, when you're managing up to a boss, you say, oh, I love it. Right? I'm always positive in the first part. Like, I love this project. Oh, this is so cool. You gave me project A and B. This is project C. Which one should we stop to do project C? So you push back with a decision. They're going to say, do them all. And you say, I'd love to do them all, but I have to choose which one is first. Which one do you want me to work on first? And this managing up, you communicate, great, I'm going to work on that first.
That's good advice. I mean, setting boundaries and protecting our time is really important. That way, the team member is also putting out the best work because they're not trying to juggle so many things on their plate. You believe that parenting can make someone be a better leader and facilitator. As a mom of twins, I completely agree with you. Why do you think that is?
Through parenting, you learn a tremendous number of skills that are really important for leadership. If you've ever negotiated with a 2-year-old, You now have negotiation strategies. And we've probably tried them all. Bribery, brute force, counting down. But you can increase your negotiation skills. You also increase your patience and your tolerance to deal with other people's feelings. Right? My little three-year-old, that's a really big feeling. It sounds like you were really frustrated. How did that make you feel? And he's like, I was really sad when you took that away from me. I'm like, okay, bud, I'm like, what can we do about this? And he problem solves with me, which honestly is more skilled than a lot of grownups that I know. Learning how to listen, learning how to be flexible, learning how to be present, learning how to negotiate. All of these are the quote unquote soft skills that we want out of business schools. And parenting, honestly, I wish that parents got an honorary MBA, because what you go through is that instrumental.
Mm-hmm. So true. I always tell people that having the twins took my multitasking skills to an entirely new level, that I thought they were pretty good until I had the twins, because life is pretty predictable. But with twins, they'll go in two different directions. You never know what they're going to say or do. You have to be ready for every situation. And that goes into my business life every day. And you mentioned the counting down. It's funny. I can just say three. And my kids know. And I had a parent say to me, wow, I go to five. I don't even start with one. I just go straight to three. And they know. So they think, oh, something's going to be taken away from me. I'm going to lose iPad time. You're so, so right in that becoming a parent teaches you so many different things about leadership.
I think it breaks you too a little bit. And it's not fun to go through, but for many ambitious, driven, talented, type A, perfectionist women out there, of which I will raise my hand, I've been in that category.
Me too, I'm with you.
You learn at some point that actually you can't push through and do it all. Like that skill set will fail you at some point. And I think that's one of the toughest lessons I had to go through, because I want to be able to do everything. I want to be able, like, so much that I want to do in this world. It is infuriating not to be able to. And that's when you have to start making those hard choices and say, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. And that is a superpower, but it can be, in my experience, pretty painful to learn.
It pushes you to the point where you have to take time for yourself. I ask this question at the end of every podcast episode. Magic happens when we focus on the part of ourselves and our business that brings us joy. What is one tip you can leave with us today about how you find and live your joy?
I love this question. I have been learning very slowly over time that you can't selectively feel some feelings and ignore others. And the more I let myself feel pain or sorrow or sadness, anger, the more that I understand what it is, where it's coming from, how to express it, the more I'm able to experience joy.
Mm-hmm. Those words are so important, because so often we push the feelings away and that doesn't really help us.
This is the work of leaders in the future. It's to understand, what am I feeling? Why am I feeling it? How do I connect with another human being? Parenthood is such a good incubator for this, but so are so many other professions, so many other projects, caring for any living thing.
And what are our teams going through, and how are they feeling, and how can we best support them in their day so that they provide the best work?
Totally agree.
Thank you so much for joining me. I feel like I could talk to you all afternoon. Please share with our listeners how and where they can find you.
Find me over at startupparent.com. And we've got a newsletter, startupparent.com/newsletter. We're on Instagram and TikTok as Startup Parent.
Thank you for joining us today. I'd love to hear from you. Reach out to me at hello@shebuiltit.com, on our She Built It website, or at She Built It on social. Thank you to my editor, Rich Streffolino, who always makes us sound good. Until next time, let nothing stop you from experiencing the life and business that you crave.